The following program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
Well, on the earth.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents.
We love the earth.
Normal Show Live, Marijuana Nation. Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator, Radical Russ Belvin.
Good afternoon, everybody. It is Tuesday, February 23rd, 2010, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, coming to you live and direct from beautiful Potland, Oregon. It's not a typo. It's a way of life. With 60 minutes of news, talk, information, interviews, comedy, music, and more by, for, and about the cannabis community. And joining me in our virtual studio all the way up in Astoria, Oregon, my good friend and half-half sister, Cannabis Carrie.
Hi, Russ. How's it going today?
It's going really, really well. We're back to normal here in the Pacific Northwest. The sun has once again disappeared until May. It's about the same up there, I suppose.
Yeah. But that's okay. It's so gorgeous here when it's raining. It's gorgeous all the time. Doesn't matter what the weather is. It's always beautiful here in Astoria.
Yeah, you know what I say. I don't mind precipitation as long as I don't have to shovel it. So we're all cool
that's
with
right.
the rain. No problems there. And for the folks that are new to the show, if you don't understand half-half sister, that just means that Carrie has a different mom and I have a different dad. So figure that out. Carrie brings us our news right after the first break from CannabisFantastic.com. What are we looking forward to in the headlines today, Carrie?
Well, we're going to go to New Mexico and cover some VA Veterans Affairs there in New Mexico. We've got an update on a law case that we did last month. And we're going to go to California and talk about a medical marijuana dispensary grower who finds himself back in hot water.
Oh, boy. Stories coming up right after our first break. Thanks, Carrie. Also coming up on today's show, it is Electric Tuesday, so we'll be getting to experimental music today from a gentleman by the name of Riss Paul Rick. It's actually a pseudonym for a man named Christopher, and a tune called Purple Blaze. Looking forward to that. At the bottom of the hour, at 30 after, we're going to be having cannabis conversations in probably one of the more contentious and controversial cannabis conversations we've had here on the show. The I-1068 initiative in Washington State seeks to legalize marijuana, and in a shocking development this weekend, the ACLU of Washington said they would not be supporting this legalization initiative. To explain the ACLU of Washington's stance, Allison Holcomb from the Drug Policy Foundation there in the the drug policy program in the ACLU of Washington. She'll be joining us to explain why they won't support the I-1068 initiative. And Douglas Hyatt, the Normal Legal Committee attorney who filed the I-1068 initiative, will be here as well for rebuttal. So check that out in Cannabis Conversations coming at you at 30 after the hour. And then in our California Marijuana Report with Eric Brenner, he's going to be bringing us an update, or a report that is, from this weekend's highly successful Los Angeles HempCon. All that and more coming up on today's Normal Show Live. Please stick around. Check us out at stash.normal.org for more news and videos. Follow me at Radical Russ on Twitter. We'll be right back after this.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 13 states today, and THCF has clinics in 8 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as in multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Montana, and now Michigan. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
You want to legalize it? Call your congressman today. 202-224-3121. It's free, it's easy, and you don't even have to give your name, just your zip code, and they'll hook you up to your congressman. Call 202-224-3121 and tell Congress you support marijuana legalization.
6 after the hour, time for our normal news with Cannabis Carry coming up next. Don't forget to check out our blog, the Stash blog, at stash.normal.org. You'll get all the hyperlinks and much more than we can cover in this one-hour show. Stash.normal.org.
Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carry.
The largest group of patients enrolled in New Mexico's medical marijuana program are those suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, according to the most recent New Mexico Department of Health data. The Veterans Administration Hospital in New Mexico and other states do not allow their doctors to recommend medical marijuana. Soldiers returning from Iraq and Afghanistan often experience PTSD that is often severe. A study in 2008 concluded that 20% of returning veterans from Iraq and Afghanistan suffer from PTSD or major depression, and suicides among veterans show that out of the 18 veterans who commit suicide every day, 5 of those are under the care of the VA. Paul Culkin of New Mexico is trying to change those statistics in his home state. Returning home after serving as a sergeant on the Army bomb squad in Iraq, he suffered from severe PTSD. His VA treatment for the anxiety disorder left him zombie-like, and after discovering medical cannabis, he was able to get off of debilitating prescription drugs and interact with his daughter again and lead a normal life. The VA policy that prohibits its doctors from recommending medical marijuana comes from advice from the DEA and says that the Department of Justice may seek civil or criminal penalties for federal physicians and other practitioners who complete forms that either recommend the use of cannabis or describe the patient's physical condition in order to facilitate the patient's entry into a state medical marijuana program. Culkin points out that many veterans are self-medicating, especially with alcohol or prescription drugs, while still active, and when they come out addicted and go into the VA rehabilitation program, they are in trouble if they test positive for cannabis. Culkin heads up a New Mexico medical patients group and is educating veterans that they can get help outside of the VA system. He is hopeful that soon they will be able to get that same kind of help from within.
Well, mark this down as example number 357 of how we mistreat and screw over our veterans. You know, we promise them the world if they'll sign up and stand up for our liberties and our freedoms. And when they come back, we treat them like this. It's just despicable. We've heard these stories before from the VA. Before this, we heard the stories of so many pain patients who are going through the VA who have to get OxyContin or morphine or any heavy-duty painkillers. And if they turn up to be medical cannabis patients, the VA doctors will cancel their pain prescriptions, right? They'll cancel them. You cannot have your pain prescriptions. Oh, well, you're a doper. We can't give you any OxyContin. It's just ridiculous, especially in the states that recognize medical marijuana. And especially especially in New Mexico, which is one of the few states that actually recognizes post-traumatic stress disorder. And with so many of these veterans, like you said, 20% of them, one out of five coming back from Iraq or Afghanistan with PTSD, cannabis could so greatly help them. And yet the federal government continues this jihad, if I may use the word, against medical cannabis, against the use of marijuana, against the legalization of marijuana, not even so much that they won't let their doctors recommend medical marijuana, but what Kerry mentioned there, if they even write up a chart that describes your condition in a way that facilitates medical marijuana. And what they're talking about there is a situation in Oregon, California, Colorado, lots of states where veterans will go to a VA doctor, again, because that's all they can afford, and they did pay for it with their, you know, their service. And the doctors, you know, since they can't recommend medical cannabis, what they'll often do is write up the patient's condition, like if they've got chronic pain or seizures or whatever, write it up in such a way that they can then take that documentation to one of the medical marijuana clinics, like the THCF clinic that advertises here on the show, or Medican, or any number of clinics in all these different medical marijuana states, where a doctor will review those records and based on the records recommend medical cannabis. They are trying to even shut that down for our veterans. You can't even think about medical marijuana at the Veterans Administration. And I'm sorry, you know, this is not exactly the America that I believe in that is going to treat its veterans so shabbily. I'm just ashamed.
An update on a case we reported earlier. A man who was chased into a subway station in New York City after being from smoking marijuana by police has been victimized a second time when all three of the New York City police officers involved were acquitted of the crime of sodomy and sexual assault. Michael Minio began to testify in his own case, yes, after the October 2008 incident where he says he was held down by two officers and sodomized with a baton by the third officer. The police officers then gave him a summons and threatened that they would go to house and serve him with a felony charge if he went to the hospital for treatment. Minio says that this corroborates his story because he had a warrant out for his arrest at the time of the incident but was let go. There was also a transit system police officer who witnessed the incident and testified for the prosecution, but jurors ultimately said that they found reasonable doubt. Defense attorneys worked relentlessly to question Minio's credibility, seizing on admissions that he made on the witness stand. He said he was a member of the Crips gang and also admitted to regularly using marijuana. Officer Richard Kern, the accused, has faced as many as 25 years in prison if he's convicted of aggravated sexual abuse, while officers Andrew Morales and Alex Cruz could have gotten up to 4 years on charges of hindering prosecution. There were two previous excessive force complaints made against Kern that they were found to be unsubstantiated, but the city settled for one accuser for $50,000. Minio was in the hospital for days with a non-penetrating wound, then returned later for care for an internal abscess. Doctors said his injuries were consistent with his claims, but defense doctors testified that he could have had a pre-existing condition to explain the abscess. The officers remain on modified duty pending a departmental review, and Minio says he will go forward and file a lawsuit against the city.
So, we have a man who is taken to a hospital with obvious signs of anal rape with a foreign object. We have a transit cop who testified that he saw three NYPD tackle the man and sodomize him with a police baton. Open and shut case, right? But the man who was tackled is an admitted pot smoker. He works as a body piercer. He was a member of the Crips gang, and he has a lengthy arrest record. So, you know, he must have been making it up. Must be all just in his mind. I wonder what's going through the defense's mind here, or the jury's mind. But the defense did bring up some points that were a little tough for the prosecution to counter. One, they pointed to the hole in Minio's boxer shorts and had an expert testify. Now, first of all, I don't know how you become a boxer short rip expert, but they had a boxer short rip expert testify that the hole in his boxer shorts was square and there was no flap left. You know, if you had stuck a baton through boxer shorts, it would have ripped the cloth, you know, straight and left a flap of cloth. But they said this looked more like it was cut out. OK, so that was one of their claims. Another one of the defense's arguments here was that Minio claimed, and the eyewitness, the transit cop, claimed to have seen that he had blood on his hands, and he reached his hands into his pocket pocket to get his ID or whatever. And so when they called the defense called for the pants to be brought up as evidence, they didn't find any blood on the pants or in the pants pocket. So all of these examples of reasonable doubt were brought up, and that is how these NYPD officers managed to skate on these charges. As far as I'm concerned, though, it seems a little fishy to me. It seems like one of these things where the cops weren't exactly found innocent. It was more like they were found not guilty because it couldn't have been proven. We'll see how this goes forward. I saw a picture in the New York papers of Reverend Al Sharpton getting involved with this, with Michael Mineo, and again, filing that multi-million dollar lawsuit against the NYPD. This is not the first time we've heard bad things about the NYPD and their treatment of marijuana smokers, and it probably won't be the last.
And the first medical marijuana dispensary grower to be tried in federal court was sent back to prison on Monday by a federal judge. Brian Eppes, 42, was convicted in 2002 of growing 100 plants back in 1997 and planning to grow 1,000 more for a medical marijuana dispensary. He received a 10-year sentence based on mandatory minimums because his house was within 1,000 feet of a high school. In 2004, after serving 2 years, the 9th U.S. District Court of Appeals freed him, but the nation's high court in 2005 ruled that California's medical marijuana laws were overruled by federal laws. Eppes has been out of prison for the last 6 years as his lawyer has been challenging other aspects of his conviction. Yesterday, U.S. District Judge Frank Damrell, Jr., ruled that Eppes had exhausted his appeals and he was ordered back to prison to serve the remainder of the 10 years. According to the Sacramento Bee, Judge Damrell told him, "It's over, Mr. Eppes," and he was escorted to a holding cell as his girlfriend and daughter wept. Seems rather cruel, Russ.
Well, don't we all feel a whole lot safer that this guy who grew 100 marijuana plants almost a decade ago, is now being put back in prison? I mean, now we can sleep well at night, right? Oh, God, once again, more federal prosecution of medical marijuana growers in the states where medical marijuana is allowed, a complete trampling of our 9th and 10th Amendment rights that continues under this stupid war on certain American citizens using non-pharmaceutical, non-alcoholic, tobacco-free drugs. Brian Eppes is clearly a medical marijuana grower. His case shows it. The testimony of so many people that he has helped out has shown this. And it, again, it's just the federal government's way of continuing to put the clamps down on medical marijuana. They realize that medical marijuana has lost the war on drugs for them. They realize that the war on drugs is pretty much over because the hearts and minds of the American people have been made up on the subject of marijuana. 81% of the American people in the latest ABC News Washington Post poll support medical marijuana. And of those 81%, 56% support an open medical marijuana system like California's Prop 215 that allows a doctor to prescribe or to recommend marijuana for any condition he or she deems appropriate. And furthermore, when we look at the polls for regulation of marijuana, the outright legalization of marijuana, these are trending upward rapidly. The most recent polls are between 44% and 53% nationwide support for legalization. And when we start looking in the Northeast and especially on the West Coast, those numbers go up significantly to up to about 58% in the latest California field poll, 60% in the Los Angeles area. We've got breaking 50% easily in Oregon and Washington. They realize they've lost the battle. They've lost it, and all they can hope to do is to take down some of us at the top and try to scare the rest of us into compliance. Well, guess what, feds? It's not going to happen. The genie's out of the bottle, Pandora's box has been opened, and medical marijuana especially is here to stay. So quit coming down on these otherwise law-abiding citizens who are doing nothing more than growing a plant to help people with their medical conditions. It's ridiculous. All right, that magical sound means it's time for our special break time, and you know what that means, especially those of you out on the East Coast. We'll be right back after this with some Toker tunes.
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? If he said he swam to China, he would send to South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Law420.com.
Hello, I'm Russ Belville, Outreach Coordinator for Normal. In my job, I read literally hundreds of headlines each month involving nonviolent, productive citizens whose lives are ripped apart by a marijuana or drug arrest. Many citizens could avoid arrest by refusing police searches and remaining silent, but police are well-trained to confuse and intimidate. That's why you have a right to speak to an attorney before answering any police questions. I hope you never need to exercise that right, but if you do, make your first call to the law offices of John C. Lucy IV. John Lucy is an accomplished criminal defense attorney with expertise in Oregon's medical marijuana law. John Lucy understands and respects cannabis and drug consumers of all backgrounds. Call John C. Lucy IV at 503-227-6000 or visit in downtown Portland. Address available at law420.com. That's John C. Lucy IV at 503-227-6000 or visit law420.com today. It's time for your daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Our PodSafe music is donated by freedom-loving musicians who support our goal of ending adult marijuana prohibition. Today we bring you tunes for Electric Tuesday, our segment featuring the best of modern electronic music in the genres of dance, new age, house, and electronica. Brought to you by Sarah Kant Photography. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now, here's some great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tune.
Well, Sarah Kant can't be with us today, so I'm bringing you to some Toker Tunes from Riss Paul Rick. This is a song called Purple Blaze.
The maps, the rain, the pills, the blaze, the hearts, the finch, the moon, the haze, the smoke, the serum, the clouds, the youth, the ropes, the riches, the ordinary truth, the crust, the lights, the flags, the grapes, the wrath, the path, the sound, the flames, the tongue, the taste, the fruit, the juice, the plums, the drums, the ordinary truth, the states, the lungs, the drop, the can, the fur, the glass, the bone, the plan, the stars, the smell, the sky, the pen, the ink, the crayon, to write it all again. The tongue, the taste, the fruit, the juice, the wrath, the path, the sound, the flames, the crest, the lights, the flags over the grapes, the robes, the riches, the coins, the fruit, the smoke, the syrup, the clouds, the youth, the hearts, the finch, the moon, the blaze, the maps, the rain, over the purple haze.
This is Willie Nelson. Friends, it's time we legalize the responsible use of marijuana and stop treating marijuana smokers like criminals. We're destroying the lives and careers of hundreds of thousands of good, hardworking Americans every year in this country for no good reason. There's absolutely nothing wrong with smoking pot. For more information on how you can help legalize marijuana, please contact Normal at NORML.org.
Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527.
Legalization, decriminalization, lowest law enforcement priority, medical marijuana, ganja sacrament, consumer cannabis, industrial hemp. The world of marijuana law reform involves many different aspects of cannabis that intersect nearly every public policy discussion in America, including healthcare, the economy, global climate change, law enforcement and prisons, immigration, religion, free speech, energy policy, and war. Now we take a look at how re-legalizing marijuana will change the world in our normal daily audio stash, Cannabis Conversations.
All right, welcome to our Cannabis Conversation, and today we're going to set this up a little bit before we get to our guests. This has to do with the state of Washington and some controversy that's happening there just to the north of me. And first, we need to get this out here that we had the ACLU of Washington sponsoring a couple of bills, one that was a legalization bill and another one that was a decriminalization bill. And these two bills had moderate success at the legislature. They were able to get some hearings, and we had some live testimony on those bills. But ultimately, the bills did fail to make it all the way through the legislative session this year in Washington State. Now, on the heels of that, a normal legal committee member named Douglas Hyatt, along with a normal board member, Jeffrey Steinborn, decided that they would file an initiative to legalize marijuana outright in Washington State. And this initiative is called I-1068. Now, the I-1068 initiative is fairly simple in that it specifies that the marijuana laws, other than laws pertaining to minors or driving, for example, would no longer be in effect in Washington State, thereby legalizing marijuana and requiring the Washington legislature to go ahead and come up with some regulations for marijuana in the Evergreen State. Now, this has generated a little bit of controversy because over this last weekend, we received an email here at Normal, which has since been published in public forums all across the Pacific Northwest, with regard to the ACLU of Washington and their feelings on the I-1068 initiative. And most specifically, an email I received from Allison Holcomb, who's with the ACLU of Washington's drug group behind the bills to regulate and to decriminalize. And in a shock here, the ACLU of Washington and Allison Holcomb specified that they would not be supporting, ACLU of Washington would not be supporting this I-1068 initiative. And I am good friends with the next couple of people we're going to invite on here, Allison Holcomb from ACLU of Washington and Douglas Hyatt, the attorney who filed the initiative. And I just want to get down to the bottom of this. We'll start with Allison Holcomb from ACLU of Washington. Allison, can you hear me okay? Oh, let's try that again. Okay, Allison, glad to have you here. And we're discussing this I-1068 initiative in the email that you sent out this weekend that said that the ACLU would not be supporting this legalization initiative. And I wanted to give you the chance to explain to our audience the reasoning behind that.
Sure. Basically, what it boils down to is that we are concerned that I-1068, as written, is one that Washington voters actually won't support, and that if the initiative gets on the ballot and fails, that would be a significant setback for our reform movement more broadly. When we fail to pass something that's described as a marijuana legalization initiative, the message that gets sent is that legalization isn't actually what the public wants, which can be deflating for our activists, and also, and importantly, it can discourage new constituencies, people that aren't already in the choir, from joining the push for these much-needed reforms.
Is there a difference, Allison, between the failure of a citizen initiative to pass compared to legislative attempts to try to legalize or decriminalize not passing? Are those bills that failed in Washington also discouraging to the community?
I think there's a distinct difference. When you tell people that Washington state legislators failed to pass a decriminalization or a legalization bill. People can understand that, and they can be frustrated with legislators' timidity to do that. When you ask the people directly, put the question directly to them, if they fail to pass it, that sends a much more devastating message.
Okay. And one of the criticisms that you specified in the email had to do with the regulatory scheme or the lack thereof as presented in I-1068. The idea here being that 1068 just gets rid of all the criminal penalties but does not replace it with some sort of regulatory scheme. Could you elaborate on that for us?
Sure, and it's important to understand the distinction here. The concern about not having regulations is that we don't have regulations for the commercial market. Specifically, there's the distinction between what is contemplated, for example, in the California initiative, Richard Lee's initiative, that would decriminalize personal possession and personal cultivation. I believe the limits that he's put forth in his initiative are an ounce of marijuana and 25 square feet of garden. You can decriminalize that for personal marijuana possession, not for sale. But what 1068 is goes further and removes all criminal penalties for all marijuana-related activity, which would include all of the commercial activity that is our mainstream media's favorite source for scary stories that they want to publish, people afraid of the Mexican cartels, et cetera, et cetera. And we think that most people, when they hear about legalizing marijuana, the idea that they have in their head is that you're going to tax and regulate it like you would alcohol. And I think when we're talking about the commercial trade, that's what people understand that to mean. They don't understand it to mean that you're just going to remove all the criminal penalties and there won't be any sort of regulatory scheme in place.
Okay. Let's go now to Douglas Hyatt. He's the Normal Legal Committee attorney in Seattle, Washington, who filed this initiative with a few others, and also Sensible Washington, this group that is behind the initiative. Can you address what Allison mentioned with regard to if we go forward with an initiative and it fails, that that's a big blow to the movement?
Well, sure I can, Russ. I mean, I think there is a definite a problem here. There's a couple of issues I see. One, I think the ACLU is being disingenuous in their arguments here. I believe that it's quite clear that you can run a citizens initiative, have it fail, and have it not affect reform at all. And I think the most spectacular example that I know of that is the initiative that some friends of mine ran in Colorado. A few years ago, they ran an outright legalization initiative. They ran it statewide. I think they got like 41% of the vote or something. And rather than have it de-energize the situation out there, I think it energized the situation out there. I think there's this attitude amongst professional activists that you can't try and fail because somehow that's a terrible thing. Everybody's gotten way too cautious. They're not willing to try bolder reforms that I think at this point the public is 100% behind. So I don't think that argument has any merit at all.
Well, Douglas, what about the point, though, about people's perception of what legalization is and the idea that if we just go out and just drop all penalties for marijuana and not replace it with something that's a tax and regulate, an alcohol-style model, that it might frighten people into thinking it's just going to be open season and marijuana in the 7-Elevens?
Well, I think that's another issue. I think again the argument here is disingenuous. I think Allison knows very well why there's no regulation in my initiative. I am asking people by writing this initiative and putting it out there. I'm asking people, or being one of a group of writers of it, actually. I am responsible for more of the legal code myself and a couple of other attorneys, and I actually invited Allison to participate in that code writing as well, because I have a lot of respect for her abilities in that regard. But at any rate, we put this code out, and we are asking people to give their labor, which is the most sacred thing they have, your time, your effort, and their money behind this initiative. And we are asking people to go all out to try and get this on the ballot and then to help us in the campaign to convince Washington voters. I believe it would be an absolute travesty and a violation of the public trust if I run something that I know has a fairly good chance of being struck down immediately after it passes on federal preemption grounds. In fact, it was Allison in an email thread a year ago or so, I think, that actually pointed out to me that preemption's a problem in these initiatives and on these issues. And I thought she was right then. I think she's right now. I know I'm right now. It simply isn't possible to put a meaningful tax and regulate scheme into the body of initiative without running afoul of preemption, and therefore we haven't done it. What this initiative does is end prohibition in Washington State. It presumes the legislature is going to get off its duff and enact a regulatory scheme that the voters and that Washington constituents would find responsible. The legislature, many people at the legislature, and including the ACLU, have been working, and especially Roger Goodman with the Bar Association Legalization Framework Initiative he's been pursuing for years now. There's way more than enough regulatory schemes. There's way more than enough ideas in Olympia on how to regulate, how to tax and regulate, and that's the appropriate place for it, and that's the appropriate place to make that argument and to put that regulation in.
Okay.
We are guaranteeing that this reform would be meaningful and would work for Washington voters. And anything else, doing anything other than what we're doing, is simply not possible, and it is not something I'm going to ask people to get involved in when I can't guarantee the reform will pass legal muster.
Okay, let's talk about the preemption argument here, because this might be something that some folks in the audience don't understand, but it's the idea that if a state goes forward and puts together some sort of law or an initiative that requires state employees or the state itself to break federal law, the federal government can strike that down due to their, you know, their powers. I hope I've explained that correctly, Allison, and I want to give you a chance to respond to some of Doug's criticisms.
Sure. You did a great job with that, Russ. And in fact, it was a California court that recently fleshed out this idea of federal preemption in a case that the ACLU was part of in defending the California medical marijuana law against the counties that didn't want to implement the medical ID card system that your law, that the law down there requires. What federal preemption says is exactly what you said. If you create a law, a state law, that creates a positive conflict with federal law, then it can be preempted. And to create a positive conflict, you actually have to require people, and not just state employees, it could be private individuals too. If you place anything in the law that requires them to break federal law, you run into federal preemption issues.
Okay.
Now, the way that Richard Lee's initiative, for example, dodges this bullet is that he, under his law, the state is required to decriminalize personal production and personal consumption of marijuana. However, while he does provide the opportunity for the government to adopt a regulatory scheme for the commercial trade if it wants to, he uses the word may. He says the local government may adopt a regulatory scheme, and if they're going to do that, here's the things they should do. Here's regulation, here's taxes. So that's how he avoids the federal preemption problems, by not requiring that. We could have done the same thing here in Washington. We could have decriminalized personal consumption, personal growing, and not required any sort of regulatory scheme. There's this internal inconsistency that I think is going to be confusing for voters if I-1068 gets on the ballot. On the one hand, Douglas is saying we can't put regulations into the initiatives because we'll run into federal preemption problems. On the other hand, we're going to ask the legislature to do that. Well, the legislature is going to run into the same federal preemption problems that the initiative writers will. If instead all you do is you decriminalize the personal stuff, you don't make the commercial market open field, you don't run into that problem. And we have to remember that if this initiative passes, the legislature is constitutionally prohibited from amending it for 2 years. So they can't come back in and reimpose the criminal sanctions on the commercial stuff. So we're in this catch-22 situation where they can't reimpose the criminal penalties, and they also can't create the regulatory system that would be preempted by our federal law. So that's why, and Douglas is right, he did reach out to me 2 weeks after he filed the original initiative language. He asked if I would be able to help in drafting, and the first question I asked him is, would you consider limiting the decriminalization portions to personal use, non-commercial use, non-commercial growing? And he responded that he would check back with his guys and let me know. that he didn't think that he was going to do that, that they weren't interested in putting any sort of limitations on the level of decriminalization that would be involved.
Okay. And I will let Doug, I'll let you address that in a second. I do want to get to one other question I had for Allison, and that is with regard to the initiative structure in the state of Washington. You mentioned the two-year limitation and so forth, but I believe Washington is like my state here in Oregon, where you have a single issue requirement, where when you put an initiative together, it can't have the kitchen sink in it, right? It's got to be one subject and one subject only. In that sort of structure, is it possible to write an initiative that would solve the problems that you and the ACLU of Washington are pointing out?
Absolutely. There's no restriction. As long as this initiative is about marijuana law reform, there's no restriction on removing some criminal penalties and imposing civil penalties or imposing civil regulations. As long as they're all designed to address our marijuana laws, that's not a problem. And I believe, at least from a face-to-face meeting that Douglas and I had earlier this month, that that's the same advice that he got from the Washington State Code Revisor.
Okay. And Douglas, go ahead and on the comments that Allison had previously.
Actually, that's incorrect. The Code Revisor did not give me that advice. that's just incorrect. What the Code Revisor said was they didn't believe my question wasn't, and it was a technical question that we really don't need to get into. It was basically about whether or not the fact that we had to, when we dismantled the criminal penalties, we wound up dismantling, because the code is so poorly drafted in the first place, we wound up dismantling civil forfeitures and drug paraphernalia. And at that time, I was concerned that that might create a problem. And the Code Advisor said he didn't think so, because that was the only way we could get to where we were going in terms of the penalty removal. But it's really a small point. And again, I find the ACLU's arguments on this disingenuous. It's just simply not true that it's easy to skate by the two-issue rule and have it all be marijuana law reform. The law on initiatives in Washington State is not that clear. It's not that good. And, you don't want to spend a lot of time litigating an initiative after you get it passed. That's what I was talking about earlier. I think it's a violation of the public trust to ask people to commit, their blood, sweat, and tears to this if it's not going to actually do something. I'm completely convinced that federal preemption is the biggest danger that you run into here. I don't think Richard Lee's initiative in California solves it. I think they tried to. I think they're trying to have their cake and eat it, too, and I don't think you can do that. I don't think this initiative is confusing at all to voters. In fact, the people I've talked to, the feedback we're getting is very positive and very good, and people understand very well what they're doing. I don't think that bloody frogs and headless chickens are going to rain from the sky if marijuana prohibition is removed. I find it curious that the advocates for legalization are now getting worried about controls and regulations and more regulation and, gee, we got to do this and we got to do that. Well, I'm not scared. I believe in the public. I believe in people, being somewhat rational and responsible on this issue. I don't think anything like the Wild West is going to happen if we repeal Washington's marijuana laws, marijuana penalties. There is still federal law on top of the whole thing. We obviously can't touch federal law, but federal law is there to deal with any large-scale commercial growers that might pop up or anybody that wants to come in and establish a Wild West marijuana market. You can believe that won't happen. I don't think people are looking to do that anyway. I think what they're looking to do is help patients, which this initiative does, help farmers, which this initiative does, and help taxpayers,
okay,
which this initiative does. It gives you a lot of savings, about $150 million, $150 million or so, I believe. I think voters are responding to this really well. I think they know it's time. I don't think people agree with the marijuana laws. I don't think anybody thinks that they're appropriate at this point, and I think that people are willing to send a message.
All right.
I also think they're plenty sophisticated enough to understand what's going on here. Voters aren't stupid. We have some of the most intelligent, compassionate voters in the country here in this state, I believe, and I think they're perfectly capable of sorting this out.
All right. Well, Douglas Hyatt, thank you so much with the Normal Legal Committee. And check out sensiblewashington.org for more information on the I-1068 initiative. Allison, from the ACLU of Washington, Allison Holcomb, I'd like to give you a chance. Last word, your thoughts on the I-1068 initiative and whether or not people in Washington should sign it.
I couldn't agree more with Douglas. I think we're all on the same page about knowing that our current marijuana laws are complete failures, and I don't think that any chickens or frogs are going to fall from the skies either. And that's not what we're concerned about at all. We're only concerned about reaching out to those people outside of the choir, the people that still need to be convinced, and getting them comfortable with significant reforms. I think if people want to sign this, sign the petitions to get I-1068 on the ballot, that's what they should do. If it gets on the ballot, I just sincerely hope that it passes. I have big concerns about what will happen if it doesn't. And that's why our organization ultimately decided not to support it. Not because we don't think the marijuana laws should be changed, which clearly we do, but that we're worried that this might not be the right strategy at the right time.
All right. Well, there's a lot of opinions with marijuana law reform out there. And here at Normal Show Live, I'm so happy to give everyone a chance to participate in the discussion. And I'll leave it to the audience to make up their own decisions. You can check out the ACLU of Washington at aclu-wa.org. Did I get that right?
You did.
Okay. And Sensible Washington, the I-1068 initiative at sensiblewashington.org. Allison Holcomb and Douglas Hyatt, thank you so much for participating in this discussion.
Thank you, Russ.
Thanks a lot, Russ. Moving forward here. Thanks a lot, pal.
All right. 46 after the hour. When we come back, we've got the California Marijuana Report and a report from the LA HempCon. Stay tuned.
Normal Show Live reminds you to never smoke and drive impaired. Hang out for a while and share.
Cause the day was hard and your work was long, and you need a break from all that's wrong. You better look at the clock, cause it's 4:19. Time to reach in that pocket for your bag of green and smoke that weed. Smoke that weed. Smoke that weed. Smoke that.
California ain't holding.
California has long been the epicenter of marijuana law reform in the United States. Every Tuesday, we're joined by Eric Brenner, the producer of the California Marijuana Report, for an interview with an important figure in cannabis in the Golden State. You can hear the entire California Marijuana Report online at California Normal's site, canormal.org, and Beverly Hills Normal at normal90210.org. Now, here with another great interview is Eric Brenner.
Special guest this week on the California Marijuana Report, Tom Cacucci, a medical marijuana patient, a former federal POW. Tom Cacucci, welcome to the California Marijuana Report.
Hello, Eric. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Tom, talk to me about your very complex legal situation. You've already served 4 years in federal prison for a legally sanctioned medical marijuana grow. Tell us what's going on.
Well, on Monday, I was supposed to have a hearing, but there was some kind of scheduling mix-up, which happens occasionally in the court system. They're so jammed, and so they weren't able to get around to me, and it was rescheduled for Friday. Now, this hearing is a motion to dismiss because there was a helicopter overflight over this grow that I had, and the grounds for issuing this infrared search that was done to this house in Woodland Hills is probably illegal. We're contesting the grounds for the issuance of that particular warrant.
All right, take us through the entire chain of events, if you may, Tom. How did this case come about?
Okay, it all started in 2002 when we were invited to grow medical marijuana up in San Francisco by the local authorities. It was a legally sanctioned grow. However, the federal government became involved in it, and it resulted in a total of 49 months for me, actually, in two different stints. I was originally sentenced to 37 months, and I did most of that time. I opted for this drug rehabilitation program, which I'm not a drug addict, but they offer time off for taking this program. That was the incentive. So I did sign up for it. I went through it. I got off 6 months early. And I went to a halfway house, and from there I went on to probation, federal probation. And while I was on federal probation, I did get involved in a legally sanctioned medical marijuana grow. And I was affiliated with a dispensary that has since been raided and shut down in 2007. I did 2 years on a probation violation because I wasn't allowed to defend myself in court at the time. So I was sentenced to 24 more months in the federal system. And upon getting out in July of 2009, the state charges have been reinstituted against me. Oh, the original raid was done by the LAPD in Woodland Hills, by the way. So it's very confusing.
All right, Tom, let's start with the federal charges, the original federal charges. You were up here in San Francisco at a legally sanctioned grow. That obviously did not hold up in court. This is very similar to the Ed Rosenthal case, is it not?
That's correct, because since it was a locally legally sanctioned grow, it has nothing to do with federal law. You know, everybody knows there's a disconnect between federal law and local law, state law and local law. And what happened was the police came to this grow that we had. It was a nice-sized warehouse in San Francisco. It's 14,000 square feet. Anyway, they showed up to this because I guess there were some complaints about smell. It's very difficult to hide the smell. We had some machines to filter some of the smell, but it couldn't get it all. So apparently somebody complained. The police showed up. It was just a full-on raid. It was San Francisco PD. And when they realized it was a medical grow, they stopped the raid. They basically destroyed the place. But when they realized it was a medical grow, they unarrested everybody and sent us on our way. But 3 weeks later, one of the police officers involved in that raid also worked for the DEA. He's what's called a cross-sworn officer. And so he just walked the paperwork over to the U.S. attorney to save this bust. It's some kind of a career-enhancing thing, I guess. And so he gets credit for this raid, for prosecuting a medical marijuana grow, because as everybody knows, federally this is not allowed, and we have to fix that.
All right, so Tom, this was done under the Bush administration, this original prosecution. We now have President Barack Obama running the show. Have you heard of any changes in attitude from the probation officers in regards to medical marijuana?
My partner, Stephanie Landa, is on probation right now. She's currently doing 3 years of federal probation. She was my partner in the warehouse grow. And they do seem more tolerant and lenient towards medical marijuana. It's, 3 years later, and a lot has happened since then. The federal level, I believe they are somewhat backing off, but there's a disturbing trend in local law enforcement where they seem to be picking up the ball for the federal government and prosecuting medical patients, dispensaries, and cultivators. And
let's
try to sort that out.
Let's address that in a minute, if we may, Tom. I just want to continue on the federal case. So you did 2 years initially for the grow in San Francisco, and where did you do your time?
I did it in Oregon, Sheridan, Oregon, which is a minimum security prison camp. And, you don't have fences, but it's still prison. It's most definitely prison. It's hard to explain just how it is because the place looks like a high school campus. It's green, there's trees, everything's, well kept, but life there is something else. You'd have to experience it just on
were you treated?
Well, I guess, you know, being treated harshly and meanly is not the same as being beaten or anything like that. But every day, there's just these mind games played by the guards, you know, to remind you that you're in prison. You already know this, but they remind you with little nitpicky things like you can only have 2 bottles of water that you purchase from the commissary, you know, at any one time, which is ridiculous. I mean, the water's foul coming out of the faucets to start with. They supposedly has levels of arsenic and lead that are beyond what's allowed by the EPA, but that's what's served to you. So you can buy water, but you're only allowed to buy 2 at a time or possess more than 2 at a time. If you have 3, the third one's contraband, and it gets taken away. You could be punished. It's ridiculous. But there's a lot of that going on in there.
Well, I'm so sorry and equally disturbed to hear of this, Tom. I'm glad you made it through. Now, that wasn't your only stint. You made mention that you were picked up again for a probation violation. Talk about that, please.
Oh, yeah. I was on probation. I finally got out of Sheridan, Oregon, and I was on probation. I finally made it to probation. And about a year after being on probation, well, I was involved with a medical grow about 6 months before. During probation, after 6 months of it. And 6 months went along okay, and some kind of a peripheral, I was involved peripherally. The LAPD was investigating some other group of people, and a friend of a friend knew them, and somehow it just got traced back to me through great investigative work. I mean, if they had really investigated me, like they said, then they would have known it was a peaceable medical marijuana grow, and there would have been no need to show up with helmets, flak jackets, machine guns, and handcuffs. But that's what happened.
Okay, so...
The upshot of that is, when you get arrested, that's called contact with a police officer, and you have to report it to your probation officer. So I dutifully reported the arrest. I made bail and reported the arrest, and I was arrested by the U.S. Marshals about 4 months later while I was fighting this state case. And when they picked me up, it was to the Metropolitan Detention Center in downtown L.A., and from there I was transported around till I finally got sentenced to 2 years probation violation in prison. And that got served in a low security place, which is a step up in security, in Safford, Arizona. It was in the middle of the desert.
So they really just bounce people around like they're cattle, with no regard to where their family and friends may be located. The Bureau of Prisons, if you go on their website, Tom, as I'm sure you have, they make it out to be a very humane, safe system. That just simply isn't the case.
No, Eric, I don't want to call it an outright lie, but it's just like Alice in Wonderland there. How they describe it and how it really is are two totally different worlds. I mean, one of the practices I really hated about the Fed system was when you are in the court process and you are not out on bail, you're subject to this thing called diesel therapy. It's a federal prisoner euphemism for getting shipped around, just like you said, like a cattle. And you're shipped on buses for 24 hours at a time, all shackled up with you have a bathroom, but try going to the bathroom where your hands and feet are shackled together. And it's difficult, and you get peanut butter. And you get held in county jails. You get held. The U.S. government contracts with a lot of county jails around the country where they just park prisoners in the worst conditions. County jails are just unbelievably bad because they don't have the funding to take care of their prisoners. So there's very little warmth, food. Well, you got a room, you know, but God, it's just dirty and it's just horrible. It's just unbelievable.
I'm so thankful that you made it through this experience. So you're now off federal probation. You're done with those creeps. Tell me about what's happening now this Friday.
Well, this Friday, finally I get my day in court to dismiss this. There's a motion to dismiss based on a faulty warrant. Allison Margolin's my attorney, and she's one of the top medical marijuana attorneys in Los Angeles. So even if this motion fails, I still have another shot at a trial, and we get to present our case in front of a jury. And it's clearly a medical marijuana grow, so I really don't foresee any problems except all the time and energy that's being wasted. And this is not what's supposed to be going on. Steve Cooley or Carmen Trutanich is kind of driving the philosophy behind these prosecutions.
Tom Kikuchi, you're a hero to millions of medical marijuana patients around the globe. This is an absolute disgrace what District Attorney Steve Cooley is doing to you. We are outraged. What can we do to help?
Well, you know, I don't really want people to feel sorry for me, but I think they should feel outraged. When I got out in July of 2009, I was on the activist trail at that point. There was kind of like a fire lit under me. I thought, I'm out now. I'm not allowed to do any of these things because I can't possibly initiate another case on top of this case. So I figured, okay, I'm going to pick up my activist role, which I was doing before I went in, except now I can do it full time. And then when Mr. Cooley came out and said that all of them are going to be banned, I was outraged. I was so mad. And I don't know what else to do except to get out there and do everything I possibly can. I'm a member of ASA. I support Normal. There's other organizations like the Union of Medical Marijuana Patients. I support them. I support them all because we have to stop these people from prosecuting.
All right. Now, how much prison time are you facing, Tom?
3 years.
So your next court date is this Friday in Van Nuys. Please give us the specifics.
Yes, I'll be there in front of Judge Lipit. She's a female judge on sixth floor at Van Nuys Courthouse.
At this Friday at what time?
At 8:30 a.m.
Tom Kikuchi, thank you so much for joining us today on the California Marijuana Report.
Thank you, and thank you, Normal, and thank you, everybody in Los Angeles that's behind this.
All right, big thanks to Eric Brenner in the California Marijuana Report for that report from that gentleman. And we'll be looking forward to tomorrow on Wednesday, our regular dose of cannabis science. But this time, a very special guest. Dr. Mitch Earlywine can't join us. He's got a prior commitment. So we will be joined by, and I'm so excited to say this, Dr. Lester Grinspoon from Harvard University. Yes, that Dr. Grinspoon, the man who the strain is named after, the man who was one of the premier and pioneering medical marijuana doctors when this first came around. He'll be joining us answering your questions in cannabis science. In addition to Dr. Grinspoon on tomorrow's show, we'll also have an interview with a local here in Portland, Oregon, who's got more details on the tragedy of denying organ transplants to medical marijuana patients. The twists and turns in his story will shock and amaze you. Make sure you tune into that tomorrow. Also, we've got our replays coming up here at 3, 5, 7, and 9 Pacific. Thanks for joining us, and until next time, take care of each other, tokers. You plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.